When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Hi, this is Ryan Fraser.
This is Troy Daly.
This is Gus Boyett.
This is Don Hutchison.
This is Jurgen Klopp, and you're listening to The Big Interview with Graham Hunter.
Thank you, Jurgen. I travel to all these interviews from Barcelona, and our socios, our beloved members, keep us on the road. This independent podcast wouldn't happen without them. Please go to patreon.com/Graham Hunter right now to join us, to become a socio, and to get every interview we produce without adverts and before it goes out on the main feed, plus lots of bonus content, including the chance to put questions to our guests and to me via the monthly Q&A. So do please go to patreon.com/Graham Hunter and join the club and get your family and friends to do so. Maybe even strangers in the street. Love you. Welcome to the first big interview of 2022. It's an interesting one, this. I have made the majority of these interviews with my two producers, Neil and Martin, mostly with footballers or coaches, or in the case of Martin Compton, an actor, Kevin Bridges, a comic, people that I know, or at least we've been in contact a lot over the years. It's been rare, not unheard of, but rare, that we sit down with a guest where it's a first-time meeting completely. And that was the case with Mark Hatley. It was also an exercise in pain for me because it was the Hatley-inspired Rangers that robbed or removed the last chance Aberdeen have had since Alex Ferguson left to win the Scottish title. Yes, that was a pretty infamous day when Michael Watt met Mark Hatley. That's in this interview. Across a pretty wide-ranging chat, my argument is that you'll find Mark very engaging, really quick, very articulate, very modern man, although his footballing attributes might be said to be not old-fashioned, because the way that Mark Hatley played never goes out of date, ever. But they're redolent of a different era, and the beauty is that he can talk about his skills, talk about them well, explain. And he does a great job of explaining how his skills took him from Portsmouth to AC Milan. The time, brief though it was, as a powerful, dominant England international footballer. Then Rangers. Across his life, Mark Hatley has done impressive things. He was a frightening striker, but he's a good storyteller. A couple of things stand out. Across these two interviews, you'll hear him talking about the way in which beating his father, being better than his father, putting the memory of his father, I would say an exceptional striker in the 60s for Chelsea, for Liverpool. Mark and his father did not always see eye to eye. Sometimes he describes that got very virulent. But he was driven by showing his dad that he was better, by telling everybody that he was better. That's a theme right across these two interviews. And if you listen to Mark Hatley on The Big Interview, you will hear one of the most extraordinary stories we've ever heard in now approaching, 120 interviews. When you hear the story of him being beaten up in Liverpool and what happened and how it changed him, I think you'll find that you'll mark that down as something to reflect on, something to tell others about, and something that was truly remarkable. You've got Mark Hatley on The Big Interview. If you enjoy this, if you've enjoyed the series, first of all, thanks for being there. Happy New Year. May 2022 be healthy, happy and blessed for you all. But if you have enjoyed it, tell people, please. Rate us. Pass it on. Spread the word. I'd like to say spread the joy, but that's for you to dictate. Mark Hatley on The Big Interview.
Listeners, welcome to the big interview. We have a treat today. I'm sitting opposite a man who's legendary for many different reasons. I'm sitting, unfortunately, opposite a man, two things I have to say, who looks about 20 years younger, not only than he should be, but than me. There's also a pain barrier to be gone through here because, boy, you did my team some damage.
Right, well,
but there's a bigger story. Mark Hately, welcome to the big interview, and thank you for joining us at this
pleasure,
this festive time.
Yes.
We're excited to talk to you because our guests are never those who are famous or who've achieved massive things. Our guests are only those that we respect and we thought were exceptional at their trade. So although you've got masses to tell us, some of which, like my life, is continental, I want to take you to a naval town. I want to take you down to Portsmouth. People often use the word Pompeii.
Yes.
And I want you to tell us how a backward step, in inverted commas, which annoyed your dad, and for those who don't remember your dad, you'll talk about him, I'll shut up, but he was an exceptional forward. Somebody who played for three of the great English teams of his era. Yeah. And it annoyed him that you went to Portsmouth after Coventry. Portsmouth is going to be a leapfrog to scoring in the most famous football stadium in the world and playing for the Rossoneri. I'm not going to spoil that story. Am I right, as you detail in your excellent book, Hitting the Mark, which is out now, you can buy it from Blink Publishing, you can get it online, you can get it in bookshops. Hitting the Mark is a good, frank, honest read, and it's the reason that we're here with Mark today. Portsmouth wasn't a simple move.
No, it wasn't, but it was a simple move for me because somebody committed to me and sold it pretty quickly. At that period, I was coming away from a Coventry City top flight football club. It was like a breeding ground for young players, great opportunities, had some great managers there, Gordon Mill, Dave Sexton, that, you know, really were good working with kids. I was sort of in a rush. I've always been in a rush to achieve, and basically to get out of my dad's shadow, because he was a big shadow in the game of football. He cast a big shadow, the first £100 signing, big centre forward. And I always saw myself as a centre forward, but couldn't get into the Coventry City team because Big Mick Ferguson and Ian Wallace were the pairing. I had a Gary Thompson, who was a year older than me, who had just come through the youth team and the reserves, and he was sort of a backup. So the only way I could get a game was to go on the left wing. So when my time came to leave Coventry City, as I say, Chelsea were looking at me, Watford were looking at me, had a couple of chats with both, and then Mr. Bobby Campbell from Chelsea, Portsmouth manager, been there, I think, two seasons, going to come up a league, building a team, you know, likes of Kevin Dillon, and as likes Neil Webb, another young player coming through who'd go on and have a great career, and Alan Bailey that had been at Coventry, Everton.
I'm going to ask you about him.
Yeah, great. He was, you know, all these things. But what Bobby did say to me, being the ex-Chelsea manager coming in, as I say, he said, "I want you to be my number nine." And that was it. That was it. He sold it. John Deacon, the chairman, had come with him as well. You know, we want to build, we've seen you, we want to build this team. We've got an Alan Bailey that's the travelled man, the experience. And we've got everything else. We've got a great goalkeeper in Alan Knight. And we want to take this team forward. We will play the way you want a number nine to play. We get the ball out wide, two good wingers, get the ball into the box. British game of football, you know, with the Kevin Dillons and the Neil Webbs that will do all the intricacies in the middle of the park. That was it, sold. So I signed for a second division football club, and my dad has gone ballistic. "Son, what did I say to you, son? Never move down the leagues." He said, "Very hard to get back into the top flight, stay in the top flight as long as possible." But I had a drive and still have a drive. I think that's been part of the longevity and the success. I've always been driving forward. It was to be, you know, to be better than my dad, you know. This Portsmouth Football Club, super supportive club, very passionate about the way they play the game. Have given me an opportunity, and I'm going to take this opportunity. Well, that's it. So literally 8-9 months, we never spoke.
On whose part was the silence greatest? Because you were annoyed because he didn't have faith in your choice.
Correct.
When somebody had said to you, Mark, so Bobby Campbell and Deacon had said, this is how we see you, and it was your position, which at Coventry, if people don't remember, Ferguson was a big old lump bearded. And it was the big little, wasn't it? The little ginger Scott, Ian Wallace.
Yep.
Good footballer.
Yep.
And Gary Thompson had similar attributes to you, and you would link up for England. Yes, you'd play in the same team for England. But I understand you in that if you say to your dad, Dad, this is the position I want to play in. Mm-hmm. They come and sort me. They want me. And he should go, son, I'm not happy, but on you go.
Yeah.
Who was more miffed with whom?
I think it was me more miffed with him because he didn't believe in me. But that is the era of the 50s and 60s archetypal man, I'm going to say. In the book, it goes back to my childhood, you know, dad being away a lot, 60s, footballing life as a 60s. And, you know, to be as good as he was and scored as many goals as he did, I couldn't understand how he could achieve that living the life he was doing. You know, not a good relationship at home with my mum. As you say, when he went to Chelsea, I never saw him for a year.
Part of which was geographical, but I know from having spoken to you, Charlie Cooks, before, who was an Aberdeen man, and my dad told me the first name that my dad ever told me about was Charlie Cooks.
Yeah.
But that era that he played in was an era where they lived down the West End or at the Grand, and they went
up and down
they
the
lived
Road.
Like kings as well, didn't they?
Of course they did, absolutely. So I didn't see a lot of my dad in that period, 67. So I would have been six or 7 years old around that period. So life became just mum and my sister. So, you know, it was going through where I was born, staying in Derby. First team I remember my dad playing for was Chelsea, and that's why I've always sort of followed Chelsea.
You would consider yourself a Blue?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
I supported Chelsea, and I supported Nottingham Forest, and I supported Rangers. I had three teams right the way through the UK when I was a kid growing up.
Rangers even as a kid?
As a kid.
Didn't know that.
Yeah. So as a kid from, I'm going to say, 8-9 of that era. Purely Nottingham Forest because my dad was then playing for Notts County, so I just had that just to... Piss him off, basically. So,
if it's any consolation to your Messi's kids, literally tell him that they love Ronaldo more, Cristiano Ronaldo more. So it's an honourable tradition from sons to dads.
That keeps dad going. Right. So anyway, we're back on that track of not falling out with my dad. Right. So I'm playing away. I'm on the conveyor belt of international because I've been playing at youth level for Coventry. You know, scored 4 goals and one game, so it's automatically that puts you on that elevation. But the difficulty for me, and I think, was me being in the second division, and you know all the players that were playing still in the first division, young, because it was basically it was a British league then.
Yeah.
Don't forget.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of good young players around. So for me to go down there, putting all that on because I love playing at international level. Always have done. Playing against the best all the time, so you're proving yourself all the time. So going down there and say being able to be the number 9 and try and impress, and because you've got Manchester City, Newcastle, Chelsea, they were all in the second division back then, playing at big grounds, you know, getting that atmosphere. It gave me an opportunity, but I'd put on the line to continue at the international level by moving down there, you know, but I had such a strong belief that I could achieve and I could achieve and go forward with my career. As I say, first game was at Craven Cottage or something, header on the far post, straightforward header on the far post, gets us off and running. And then from there, what was it, 24 goals in that season in 32 games or something. It was just boom, 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 boom.
Explain to people then what it's like
to be, because you were Portsmouth's record outlay, mm-hmm. all of this you can find in hitting the mark.
Yeah.
You come down 24 goals, mm-hmm. they can't believe it.
Mm-hmm.
Paint the picture of what being a successful striker at Fratton Park in the 80s is like.
Yeah.
And I mean, give them the smells and the sounds, because I've been there and
it's just an amazing place. Portsmouth, you think of naval people, background, and it is, that's what it is. But from that, you get a people that work hard, party hard, and love the football team. That's what you know.
For a lot of people, that's your life.
Can I just say that's what Ports are?
Yeah.
You know, do you know what I mean?
It's like
Glasgow, Liverpool, Newcastle, to a certain extent. They're all crazy about their football teams.
And it's a demand, but it's also quite a demanding.
Yeah.
I want to say
demand
aggressive.
Demand everything from the players that they're supporting. Well, my style. I mean, I was always aggressive, so that wasn't a problem. You know, I'd charge around here and charge around there. I had so much energy. As I say, Dad never bought me a bike. You have to run. And run with your friends, because if you want to be a footballer, you need to be super fit.
And they were on bikes and you were running along.
I would just run. I never got a bike till literally 3 months before I was finishing school, and it got stolen a week after I'd had it.
But so, luckily, Ray Wilkins' kid thank you for having had a bike at one stage. We come to that in a minute.
Yeah.
But so the Fratton Park atmosphere feeds you, I suppose, a little bit, because they love a warrior, as good a footballer as you are. They love a warrior.
Yeah. Listen, everybody loves a warrior. Right, but if you can bring something else with that warrior, somebody with a bit of thinking, a little bit more, and that was, as I say, back in 1970, I was the first sort of World Cup-y type thing, and I was thinking South American football. Wow, this is good, and that sank in. Because I was always in and around training grounds, always as a small boy, and even little glimpses of football that you got back then that were on the telly. You know,
you were soaking it up.
I was looking at it and thinking, you know, I like that. You know, I like centre forwards, what classical centre forward. It was a skillful player. You know, it's not that, you know, that hammer.
So if you were gifted physically, all the things that made you a traditional centre forward, but from a young age you were thinking about I adapt and
be better than my dad.
This is a phrase that's going to come up a couple of times.
This is going to come up a lot, trust me. I've never been satisfied with, as a footballer, of being who I was. I always wanted to be better. As I say, I said to you before, I've never watched an older game, never put a tape on.
You never go back and watch Mark Hatley of the 80s, the 90s.
No, the only time I see it, if I walk into a supporters' cup and they've got it on, you know, on the wall when you're in there.
This is a conscious psychological choice of yours. Don't revel in the past. Wallow in the past.
It's unimportant.
Forward we go.
The past is unimportant to me. It's what you're doing right now and what you're doing over the next period. And I always wanted to be doing that to the best of my ability. So looking at that game in 70 and looking at what European strikers, because a lot of people look at European strikers, and we can get onto that with Neil Seahan, right? I would look at a European striker based on the fact that I'm a British striker and think, God, he's lazy, right? So when we get to the Milan chapter, my whole thought process of being
upside down,
completely upside down.
But this is okay. Then I take that point and go back to Fratton Park, because at Fratton Park they wouldn't have understood if you wanted to play. Like, the first person that I heard explaining what you said there was Freddie Canuti, if you remember him.
Yeah.
And he told me specifically when he was at Seville that at West Ham and Tottenham, commentators, some coaches, fans were like, lazy around. Yeah, and he's
run.
In Spain, he said, they want you to run with intelligence.
Yeah.
They want you to use your energy when it counts, save it for it. And that's thematically what you were talking about.
Yes,
but at Fratton Park in the 80s, they wouldn't have stood for any of that shite about, like, get your arse and work it.
It was like tackling fullbacks, work across the line, pair of you work across the line, myself and Alan Biley. And that was the British game. The British game was a physical game. Invariably, it was back to front. There was not a lot of football. And a lot of great players of that period, I mean, talk about Glenn Hoddle here, would have suffered with that. You know?
They did. Yeah.
Fortunate to play with Glenn and get the opportunity to pair up later on in my career. But one of the best, greatest experiences ever, I think, for both of us as well. But as I say, the Fratton Park experience, Bobby Campbell said to me, one thing he said to me when I got there, you know, after a week or so of training, I'd love you to be a little bit more nasty, right? And I'm looking at him and I think, what do you mean? And I'm running around, I'm tackling, what do you want me to start getting my elbows out and upsetting people? I said, no, no. He said, I want you to be nasty with the ball, right? So when the ball comes to you, I want you to absolutely be dominant with that ball at your feet. Nobody's going to, you're going to protect it. You get your body around it, the ball comes into you, it sticks in there, right? I don't care if you have one touch, two touch, three touch, but nobody's going to get the ball off you. That's all I want from you. So set yourself, bump, work away. Worked on the weights for a bit more. Always say, these muscles in your arm for a striker are the most important thing, because that's what you're holding people off with all the time, where they're trying to get in. So from Dave Sexton, with all the technical side of it, and Gordon Milne and all the technical, and Bobby Campbell come out and just said, I want you to be nasty. And as I went to Milan, there's another thing that will come into protecting that ball.
Well, when he says that at Fratton Park, there's a huge, it's a technical reason. It's like, hold the ball so that nobody can touch it, so we've got control of it, presumably so others can file around you, and it gives just a beat for
Kevin
them to...
Kevin Dillon and Neil Webb, those sort of players that see in and around a centre forward.
So if it's held, you can lay it back and turn. And
they can afford to go because they know it's going to stay.
It's going to stick.
It's going to stay.
On the other side, though, you were athletically and physically able in a time where much more was permitted.
Yeah.
To put yourself about, and there's a different meaning to nasty, as you said to Bobby.
Yeah.
In that year at Fratton Park, how many times did you go like, well, I know this centre half, I'm gonna bully him, I'm gonna hurt him, I'm gonna take advantage of the referees? Yeah, you've got one or two, because in those days, just about everybody had one or two, a fullback. How often did you do that? How often did you avoid that? How much did you know about centre half before you played him?
Listen,
practically nothing.
Can I just say, I had an arrogance or a confidence, because that line of arrogance and confidence has always been a grey area in football, well, in life, basically. I never looked at a team sheet, ever, right?
Ah.
Ever looked at a team sheet, whether I was playing for England, whether I was... Anyway, right, because I had 15 minutes. The first 15 minutes, my dad said to me, have the first 15 minutes of a game in your head, what you want to do with the ball, so you impose yourself on the back four. Normally, invariably, it's two centre-halves that you're playing against. So if you impose yourself in the first 15 minutes, right, you hold the ball up, don't give the ball away. Your first time you get the ball, do something simple and build on that 15 minutes, right? So, and I took it a step further, because once the 15 minutes was up and the game was going well for me, I would then go and try and play on a fullback, right, between a fullback and a centre-half.
Because you'd had the experience at Coventry, actually, it was then beneficial to have known what it is to play out left wide.
All I wanted to find was a weakness, right? Or weakness in the back four, and that's all I did all my career. And if you could find that weakness in the first 15 minutes, well, it's a ball over the centre half's right shoulder, over his left shoulder, you know, chink back in the way. You find it in the first 15 minutes. So I used to do that. If I could find one, I'd move on to the other one. So I didn't want anybody to be able to mark me.
How then did you... Let's say just a hypothetical. You found that weakness. And one of the suppliers, let's say, because people remember him as Neil Webb.
Yeah.
How do you transmit? Do you just go like...
Smart players see it.
They see what you were doing, and they automatically...
Yeah, absolutely.
Mark's done this. Yeah. We'll put it... He's faster, or he's a better jump, or the centre-half doesn't turn, and we'll do that.
If you look at any of my DVDs or whatever, you know, things from the past, I never jumped. I've never had a centre-half at the back of me. I would always be on the left or the right-hand side of a defender, right, all the time, just jumping across. So instead of just jumping up where a defender can come straight over the top, if you're jumping from the side, a defender's got to look at you all the time. So once he's looked at you, he's taking his eye off the ball.
Right? So you're buying yourself more time.
You're in charge.
Yeah.
You're in charge.
Yeah,
if I'm standing right in front of you, you can see the ball, me. Just simple little things. You know, it's...
You like it.
Yeah. So you give yourself that half a metre if you want. If he'll come to you, if you're standing between the two centre-halves, you go and stand right in the middle. So you neither knows
ask
which one's marking.
Which one of you wants to come and get me?
Which one of me wants to run behind off which shoulder? And it's just, I mean, that's the game, a thinking game.
Before the rest of this big interview, I'd like to tell you that our entire archive of audio and video content is now on our new YouTube channel. We've begun filming all of our interviews, and there are already loads of clips with guests, including Rio Ferdinand, Connor Cody, Brendan Rodgers, and Jamie Carragher, plus full interviews for you to watch and to share. Please do share with friends. Go to YouTube and search Graham Hunter, or click on the link in the show notes to this episode and become a subscriber. I honestly think you'll enjoy it. Thanks.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Spin your passion into a business with Shopify and break sales records with the world's best converting checkout. Let's hear that one more time. The world's best converting checkout. Shopify's legendary checkout makes it easier for customers to shop on your website, across social media, and everywhere in between. Now that's music to your ears. Any way you spin it, you can be a smash hit with Shopify. Start your dollar a month trial today at shopify.com/records.
We appreciate this, and one of the first times we did this in this series, we've been going 6 years in Easter, was speak to Chrissy Waddle about whether he could talk us through the balance he had, and when he was looking at an opposition, whether he looked at the ball, whether he looked at them, how much time he, and his description was as beautiful as yours. And Chris is in hitting the mark, talking about your ability, particularly in the 86 World Cup. But I would say that a man like you playing at a nine doesn't only benefit from a Webb or a Chrissy Waddle. Often you need to have a striking partner. Not always, but often. Now, this is a little bit of self-indulgence. Not for you, because you know him, but I live and work in Barcelona. Pete Jensen lives and works in Barcelona, works for La Liga Television, and is Pompey daft. And all he'll ever talk about, hello Pete, is Alan Wiley. For those who never saw him, who can't remember him, describe, please, the man and the footballer.
He's a great guy. Honestly, he was the chirpiest man you could ever meet. He's such a great guy. I'd never met him before. As soon as I got there, went and stayed with him for a while till I got everything settled down. He's a guy you want if you're having a pub quiz, and it's a music pub quiz, because he knows everything.
Seriously? Then I adore him. Then he's up there for me.
He's looking like Rod Stewart anyway.
He does. Well, what do you mean by that? Because I know.
It's the hair. He always had that, you know,
it's bumpy at the top, long at the shoulders. In some of it, dyed white.
As we all did in the day.
Yes, back in the day.
He was a rock star. That's what he was.
Portsmouth's Frank Worthington.
It's a great player to be with. I was fortunate, Graham, to have characters that I played along with at the real right time in my development of a career. As I say, Alan was sensational for me. You know, he was that experienced player. Some say he was a journeyman. I think he was a lot more than that. He had good times at Derby, had good times at Everton. And so he played at a really good level, and I was getting him right now when I needed somebody.
He read your movement, he moved off you, smart, absolutely,
because he allowed me to do what I wanted, to lead the line.
If people, which they will do, read Hitting the Mark, I want to compare Biley's movement with Morris Johnson's movement, because you often felt that Morris was playing his own jazz solos and nicking off to areas of the park that you didn't help you. Whereas Alan was clever in reading
between the sticks. He was the player that would play between the sticks, right? So the goals, right? The width of the penalty box. Like a European striker, really, because we had the wingers. We had the wingers, and our job was to be in and around, create space for each other, and put the ball in the back of the net from this service and this service just behind us. He knew that. I knew how to do that through the British centre forward. You know, you pushing people, where taking defenders into a space that you're going to come out of to leave for your Alan Bailey. And we hit an understanding very, very quickly, as I think intelligent footballers do. I mean, Kevin Dillon, for me, Kevin Dillon was one of the best players I played with. He was so far ahead of him. And he would be so frustrated because he'd be three or four passes ahead of everybody.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, one of these frustrated players. I'm still really good friends. Oh, we have contact.
What a combination then between him and Webb. Two very, very good footballers together.
Young, yeah. He was slightly older. Neil Webb was the younger player. But, you know, we had a really good balance.
Most of this prepared you for that elevator that you were on, because you'd always been scoring goals at England youth level, but you've always been athletically slim.
Mm-hmm.
How could you lose half a stone?
First game.
Checkpoint Charlie. Tell us about Checkpoint Charlie.
Yeah.
Why you were there, why it made an impact on you, and how did you lose weight?
Food. The food situation.
Which tournament are we talking about?
England youth. It was the England...
Under-18s?
Under-18s, yeah. And we were playing, I think it was Poland, East Germany, one of those. So we were Checkpoint Charlie, all this sort of stuff. And we stayed, no hotels back there. It was like a hostel, right? No chefs travelling with you. So you got the food that you were getting, which was...
But the locals were
eating. The locals. Fussy, I was a fussy eater.
Oh, really?
Fussy eater, yeah. What we all did, got everybody to shave their heads, right? So we had about 9 players with all shaved heads, right?
Really?
Yeah. This, back in the day.
Why?
Because it was something to do, right? When you're 17 and 16, right? So it's
Whoa, we have to stop here, Mark. So whose idea is it? We're all sitting around in East Germany, can't touch the food.
Shave our heads.
Lads, I've got an idea.
Yeah. You see teams, in the modern, in World Cups, dying their hair.
Johnny Barnes did that and got taken apart at Liverpool. He literally was bored when they shaved his head, and he got slaughtered for it.
Can I just say, it was a piece of brilliance, because nobody could pick up who we were, right? It was, God, who's this? We got... Pick Baldy up. You get Baldy.
You don't read this in tactical books here. First, shave your heads.
Shave your heads, yes. Everybody wear the same number.
Now, listen, I'm really sorry to be picky on this, but are we talking electrical shaving, or are we talking good old lather? Let's be honest. You have to, first of all, clip it off.
Yeah.
And then shave it off.
Yeah, all that. We did it. And listen, as the story goes on, we got to the final. We won the final. And I still have this today with Ruud Gullit when I bump into him. We played Holland in the final, and he was injured. And he always says to me, "If I'd have been fit, we'd have won." And I said, "I don't think so."
No,
I don't think so. So I have that one over him. But it was another great experience.
But you were on the march,
because
you become part of an era where England under 21s win the European Championship twice in a row. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And the first one you make an impact in, but I think injury robs you of being part of the final. But the second one,
suspension. I got suspended.
That's the Ray Stewart
incident. Yes. That was up at Hampden.
You were just exchanging pleasantries with Ray, and the referee got it.
We were 1-0 up. Gary Thompson scored, who was my centre forward. I was playing left-sided winger type thing, and Gary Thompson had scored the goal. We were 1-0 up. It was like the final 5-10 minutes of the game, and a long ball, the shock, long ball over into the corner. So I'm chasing Ray Stewart back. I sort of slide the ball away for a throw in right by the corner flag, and as I slide through, he just comes through and kicks me straight in the balls.
Does he deliberately or?
Yeah, it was a deliberate one.
Ray was a pretty tough, good penalty taker. Yeah. Dundee United, West Ham, known by the West Ham fans.
Doesn't take a good right hander though. Well, that's for me was a red card.
Didn't need VAR.
No, it was
a stick on. Was it
off? I just went bang and off, and that cost me a place in the final, which obviously we won. And it cost me, I think, our 4 games. It cost me the start of the next tournament.
Ooh la la.
Yeah. So.
Do you have a good right hook?
Well, I'm ambidextrous, so I can stand either way. Yeah.
That's hard to read if you're not in a street fight, but in a boxing fight.
Yeah.
Had you hit people before?
I got beat up really, really badly when I was about 11 or 12 when I was at school in Liverpool, coming out of a cinema with my friend. with a group of guys. There was about seven or eight guys, but there were 17, 18-year-olds. And I was always tall. And
we're talking in the region of 1971, 72-ish, and your dad's been playing for Liverpool.
Yeah. So we are, I'm going to say, 72, 73. Yes, that's where we would be. And we're coming out of this cinema, and I was quite a shy boy until this incident, right? And I'm walking away with my pal, and he's on his knee-high to a grasshopper. We both love cricket, so I was a cricket player and a rugby player. That was my favourite sports. Anyway.
Wow.
So we're walking away, and I get this bump in the back of my head, and somebody's come flying through me and kicked me to the floor. All right? So first thing I do is bounce onto my feet. All right? So bounce onto my feet, all of it, and then I'm surrounded. And now I'm just getting... It was a 35 minute beating, but I never went down and I never ran away, right? But I broke a cheekbone, broke my nose, broke the jaw, knocked some teeth out, all that sort of stuff.
Just bad lads, or?
Just bad lads. They were brothers, I know who they are.
To this day?
Yes, I know who they are. I actually bumped into this guy. He was working the door at my sister's wedding.
Whoa, stop.
Yeah.
One of the lads outside the cinema in 1972.
One of the brothers
is working the door at your sister's wedding.
Yeah, I told her. I said that's one of the guys that really beat me badly. Anyway,
this is literally incredible.
Yeah. Honestly, I'm going to say 10 weeks off school or something like that.
That's a bad beating.
That was a bad beating. But what I got from that that one incident, I could not be hurt anymore.
Yeah,
you know,
because that
was.
It takes the fear of the unknown away from you. You know what it's like.
They actually gave up. There were seven or eight of them, all with big eyes and flat noses. So I'm hanging on and just doing what I do. I've always been strong here.
Yeah.
Right? It's from watching my dad when I was 5 and 6. I was doing press-ups with my dad.
It's a life-changing incident.
It's a lesson. It was a lesson. Yeah, but it was a life-changing thing to me to be that character, you know. I did have a temper before that, you know, and I've been in a couple of scuffles and been able to sort that out. But when you get a raining down on you for 35 minutes or something like that, it teaches you and it changes you.
I think so. So you lose the beginning of the next campaign, but I still want to emphasise for people that don't remember that early 80s. One, you're part of an era where England are under 21 champions twice in a row, and you're a centre part. The second competition, it's raining goals for you. You become golden player. And you beat a very good Spain side in the final full of Michel, Real Madrid legend.
Yes.
Sanchez, Real Madrid legend. Zubizarreta, Barcelona goalkeeper, when they win in 92, the European Cup final, whatever. And you played with Terry Gibson, a colleague and friend of mine.
Yeah.
What memories do you have of becoming a champion of Europe?
See, when you're that age, it's just another game. It's just another game. I think it's when you get into, you know, the latter stages of your career, finishing your career, where you see that and the influence that moment had. I couldn't have told you who the players I was playing against in that. And, you know, people often ask me who's...
You'd have to go back and
look it up. I can remember getting an elbow from him, from the centre-half. Right, then I had a star split right in the middle of my lip, literally 5 minutes into the game, and that just sparked me straight away.
Do you judge it to be a deliberate elbow? I'll put one on him.
Yeah, because in the first leg of the final in Seville, I cracked a rib. So I was playing with an injection, six injections, right round.
In order to play the second leg?
To play the second leg. And then I caught one from the centre-half again, really early on in the game, an elbow, top on my lip. And that just fired me, just fired me, and, you know, I scored a belting goal on the day. I hit this ball first time with my left foot coming over my shoulder, and it just went boom, by an arrow into the top corner.
Is that to win a final?
And that's how to get noticed.
Yeah, because I take it then from the way you've described your lack of interest in opponents, I'm going to just go and impose myself. you're probably completely unaware that a tournament like that is being heavily scouted.
Of course it's. I'm focusing on doing the job, getting this done, being better than I was the week before. And that's been all the time. That's all I've ever done.
But nobody in the England setup, nobody in the press that travel, because there was a good deal of press interest in England retaining their undertaker. None of them say to you or to the rest of the troops, I don't just mean AC Milan, but this scout was here. Nobody mentions that. There's no buzz about it.
No, there's nothing like that. But you know what the press was like back then anyway, because it was, you know, the social media and all this sort of, we got now, boom, 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 it's up and that. And everything's out there, literally in jig time. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was just pleased that we'd won. Pleased that I'd scored. I'd had a good game. And it was added to the England youth, you know, because my dad didn't win a lot.
No.
My dad didn't win a lot. My dad didn't play for England. So I'm playing for England at youth level. I'm playing for England at under 21 level.
So you're already achieving major objectives,
I'm notching things up.
Put him in the shadow.
Correct. So this is another step further out of that big shadow that my dad cast.
At what point does he begin to congratulate you?
Probably when we score in the Maracanã.
Okay, then that's the perfect move to this, because you talked early on about, even before the under-18s, being on a conveyor belt, whereas if you shine, you probably will
You're
be promoted.
It. You're on it.
Now, from the South American tour, initially, I think, strangely, just like with your dad, you have to wait for maybe a couple of injuries, but you get the call off. And I loved in Hitting the Mark, you say, I didn't give a toss if I'm going, whether they've initially called me or not. I'm going with England, full cap. So you lose at home to USSR, which I remember that time.
In five minutes.
But is England losing at home to USSR?
Yeah.
That's a real downer. The media then would have been right on the manager. Yeah. But the manager, Bobby Robson.
Yes. Straight away.
And off you go far away, which is probably very welcome.
Yeah. Best
to
trip
South
ever.
America. The only player we've interviewed for this series of that trip is Simon Stainrode.
Yes.
Who didn't get a minute.
No, Simon. It was a good trip.
Bit of a character.
Yeah, there's a story about
Did you live
that.
A little bit?
Oh, we did.
He says you did.
Oh, we did.
Tell a story and tell a trip in your own words.
The game comes and there's an injury to one of the strikers for England. So this is on the eve. So I get the arm from Bobby. He said, we've got a problem with a centre-forward and you're going to play tomorrow. As simple as that. There was no messing around. And I went, okay, that's how I was. So I'm still on the buzz from the under-21 stuff. I think I've got a right to be here, even though I'm second division football.
Yes.
I believe I've done enough to achieve this position. And playing against Brazil was casting them back to 1970. You know,
I love that echo. I love that.
So I'm there, and I can now prove I'm a British centre forward, right? And listen, everybody forgets who scored the winning goal that day. That was me, right? Everybody forgets that.
People forget
John
the
Vaughan.
Assist that you gave to John. I mean, it was one of the classiest assists.
Playing against a really good player, the boy Moser, went on to have a great career.
I think he played with Chris at Marseille. I think.
Yes, he did. I put the ball on my chest and I played it out to John. We were both born on the 7th of November, by the way.
I didn't know that. Viva Scorpio.
Yes. So he does what he does. He beats five players, puts a goalkeeper on his backside. I'm looking for the ball back so I can tap it in. It was one of those things. John then, second half, gets to the byline, pops it over to the far post. I get a run on the boy Moser, head the ball down, foot the post. England 2, Brazil 0. Yeah, and that's it.
But as well as the
fireworks.
Win for you, I love this echo of this is Brazil in the traditional kits, my memories of 70.
Yeah.
This is possibly at that stage, maybe even now, the most famous stadium in the world.
Yes,
partially because of the 1950 final in America, and I had 200,000 people there in Uruguay beat Brazil, but you scored on hallowed ground.
Correct.
And you've done something, again, the phrase again, that your dad never even came close to doing.
No, he went on an FA tour, and that was it. So I'm well and truly now out of that shadow. I am Mark Hatley, the stand on the own guy centre forward.
What does it feel like to come off that pitch? In Maracanã, you've beaten Brazil, there's a wonder goal, but your goal is extremely good. I think it's a trademark goal in that the timing of your jump is perfect. The ball is really well flighted for you to get up. If you're the better jumper,
you're going to score better. Now getting a run.
Finishing across the keeper again is a good skill.
Yeah.
You were very confident, but you just walk off and at the end, after you've showered and out of there, you're like, yeah, okay, it's in the pass of what? Yeah, that must be a cloud nine moment.
No, it's pretty much like that. Me and Barnes, he had a couple of days on the beach, which was good. We were at the Ambassadors. We had a massive barbecue. Bobby had done it really, really well. It was an unbelievable result. As I say, Bobby sort of rewarded us with a couple of days of, let's have a party. There was an incident there that I was going to say with Simon and Peter Shilton. Well, you know, Simon's a smoker and all
larger than life.
Yeah,
and lives life to the absolute.
It was brilliant. We sat around this table and we're all way on with it. Shilts, has a lot to say when he's had a drink, right? And sometimes it's
we're all guilty,
critical.
Yeah,
he's very. But see, the next day he never remembers it. That's the beauty of it. Typical goalkeeper. Anyway. So there's a few words said, and he said to Simon, he can't even figure out why you're on this trip. One of them, right? So Simon's smoking his cigarette, and he said, right, he stands up, and he goes, flicks his cigarette out on Peter's head, right? And he said, I'll see you outside in 2 minutes.
Oh, well done, Simon.
Right? So we're all sitting there chuckling away. Because we know Shilts won't get up and go out, right? So he's sitting there, Brian Robson says, well, Shilts, that's been 5 minutes. that's been 5 minutes.
Well, then Captain Marvel.
Are you going out or what? Right. Because if you're not going out, I'm getting him back in. Right.
Very good.
Yeah, so that was sorted.
Simon's really so funny. Another man where, like you, I really liked your phrase where you're like, the borderline between confidence and arrogance is very slim, and people see it different ways, but Simon, I think, has got this innate self-belief that is actually not based on how talented he was with the football. There's just a certain this is the man I am, and you can take me or leave me. I like that.
Well, I think he's just being honest with himself, as my dad always said. In football, you have to be honest, right? Some people might not like that honesty of who you are, right? But at least you're honest with yourself, right? You'll go to bed at night, you'll sleep at night. See, if all this noise around you, it's only your family that need to love you. Right? So picking a newspaper up, seeing a headline, means nothing.
Good or bad, you mean?
Yeah, good or bad. It means nothing at all. It's all about that circle, right? You believe in yourself. And that's all I have been in football. I've been honest. And some people don't like honesty.
Thank you for listening to The Big Interview. It's produced by me, which sounds egotistical, but it's also true. Graham Hunter. And Back Page. Our music is by Beer Jacket. Who else? Editing by Charlie McGarry. Thank you to our hosts at Acast and our loyal sponsors at Bet365. We're also supported by our socios. Find out how to become a socio, how to support us, at patreon.com/GrahamHunter. Here endeth the lesson.